You're listening to Unspooled Real on GotchaMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Nolf.
How's your evening going?
It's going pretty well. It's pretty busy. I went to Chinese class after work, and then I recorded another podcast right before this one. I also record for this site called oneofus.net. It's like 15 minutes, and I talked about the Maze Runner sequel.
Oh, nice, which you have seen already, correct?
Yeah, I saw it about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago at this point.
I kind of smart-aleckly, I don't know, I'm probably butchering that. I don't even think there's a right way to say that, but I kind of like said something on Twitter today to the effect of like, is this even a viewing option this week? Like, I kind of even forgot that movie was coming out. I mean, I'm sure it's going to do pretty good business, but it's like with Black Mass and Everest, why would you go see this movie?
If you're a teen who's read the books, sure, why not?
I guess.
But even then, it is nothing like the books, and the books aren't even that good. It 180s.
Yeah, not even Littlefinger can save it.
No amount of Game of Thrones characters can save the Scorch Trials.
No, or Terminator Genesis for that matter.
Oh, right.
But anyway, in addition to the Maze Runner, what have you been watching this week before we dive into our movies? Not one, but two movies this week.
Yeah, I'm so excited to dive into two movies since we were only supposed to do a cop car originally, but then we added a gift. But not like the gift, but
yeah, we already did that one.
Well, anyway, I actually watched a lot of movies, but a few I want to highlight. I watched Dogtooth for the first time, and that was amazing, which got me really excited for The Lobster. And I also watched two Korean movies, one called More Than Blue and another one called Ilmar. And Ilmar is, I don't know, you know about The Lake House. It's the original Lake House, and boy, is it way better.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've never seen The Lake House, but I don't really plan on it anytime soon.
You don't need to plan on it, but oh man, I cried so hard at the end of Ilmar, and I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but More Than Blue was pretty good. It wasn't what I was looking for, though, so I think I kind of judged it for not being as sad as I wanted it to be, but yeah, definitely Dogtooth was my favorite out of all of them.
Dogtooth's great. I still haven't watched Alps, his follow-up film.
I've heard mixed things.
I've heard it's good. I mean, I've heard
kind
of mixed things too, but I've ultimately heard that it's good. But that's kind of next on my list, or at least, you know, to check out before The Lobster comes out. I'm so excited for that.
Oh, movie. I'm so excited for The Lobster. Like, I can't wait. It's like I'm seeing it in 1 week, and I'm basically freaking out.
It's exciting. It's exciting. Yeah, I've actually got to watch a couple movies this week, in addition to the two that we're going to be discussing. But I finally got to see Heaven Knows What by John and Benny Safdie. I had been wanting to watch that movie since it was out for 2 minutes in June, because it did not do well financially, because it's a drug drama, and nobody wants to see heroin addicts in the street of New York.
No.
So the movie did not do very well, but I finally got to see it because it was available on iTunes, and I actually really loved it. I know drug dramas are hard to watch. They're not everybody's cup of tea. And like, it doesn't have the sort of like stylistic flourishes of something like Trainspotting or Requiem for a Dream to like make people like, oh, it's depressing, but it's really cool to look at. Like, it doesn't, it's very like dry documentary style, but it's based on this woman named Ariel Holmes, her memoir. And she plays herself in the movie essentially as a homeless drug addict in New York, living in New York City. But it's a very like, there's like a faded love story involved, and it's also like it's funny but also very dramatic, and it's just I thought it was a really strong movie, and it was everything that I had hoped it would be from what I'd heard. And yeah, I mean, it could pop up in my top 10 at the end of the year, who knows. We still got a lot left to go, but it's definitely high up there right now.
Ooh, that's good. Oh, speaking of movies that popped into my top 10, I also saw Grandma, which I thought was so great.
Nice. I want to see that really bad. I love Lily Tomlin. I haven't watched I haven't actually sat down and watched the show, but my fiance has been watching that Netflix show, Grace and Frankie, and I've kind of popped in here and there on it. And, I mean, it's pretty good from what I've seen. You know, maybe I'll sit down and watch the whole thing eventually, but I liked what I saw.
Yeah, Lily Tomlin's great. And then I just thought the story had so much layers to it, so many layers to it. And it's really smart without being show-offy smart, which I feel like a lot of Sundance movies, you get that, where it's like, oh, look how smart I am, oh, look how creative I can be. And it's just a very straightforward drama that had just really good writing.
That's good. That's actually refreshing, which, and that's an interesting point to dive off on, because both our movies today are Sundance movies, or they did play at Sundance. At least that's where they first kind of got the recognition.
That's a good point. I actually didn't think about that. These both of these movies also are very unstylish, like your normal Sundance movie.
Yes, very much so. One of them to great effect. We'll get to it. We'll get to it later.
Okay.
But then I guess the other things I watched, I watched Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films. And I just enjoyed the hell out of that movie, just because I like movies about movies. I love documentaries about films and film studios. Like, I know you and I were both fans of Jodorowsky's Dune
that came out
last year. Very, very good. It was in my top 10 of last year. Electric Boogaloo was just incredibly entertaining. I mean, it clips along really fast. It almost kind of plays like a clip show at times, which is like one kind of knock I would say on the movie, just clips of batshit crazy Canon films that were released in the 80s and 90s. But like, it was just interesting to see. And the other thing I wish the movie dove into more, like there's like some post credit interviews where they talk about how movies like they singled out The Expendables, and they singled out Olympus Has Fallen, of like, you know, studio movies that are like using the Canon model, essentially, that were like total like schlock movies. But I wish they would have dove into more about how those sort of B movies have like become the A movies now, and like how that's kind of feeding back. I wish they would have gone into it more, but ultimately it was entertaining to see the rise and inevitable fall of this organization that was just like basically throwing good money after bad over and over and over again. But it was nevertheless entertaining to watch.
I think that played at Fantastic Fest either, I think last year, and I really liked the title, but I didn't end up seeing it. And now I'm regretting it a little bit, because I do like movies or documentaries about the studio system, or like smaller studios and older movies and just, you know, old history.
Yeah, and it was an exciting footnote about that. And then finally, interestingly enough, I ended up rewatching Age of Ultron this weekend.
What?
I actually liked it more the second time, believe it or not.
Interesting. Maybe I'll have to watch it a second time, because we both didn't. I think we were both on the same boat of like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed watching it in the big IMAX, but like the story kind of like, you know, left me like I did nothing to chew on. And it's not like, you know, it's some deep plotted movie or anything, but I'm watching it again and I'm like, the first hour and a half of this movie, I think bests the first film. Like, I really do believe that. And then it kind of goes off the rails is not the right word, but it definitely loses me. And I think because there was a longer cut of this movie, I can see where they like totally cut out like things that needed to be explained, or like character, either motivations or what have you, development that needed to be fleshed out more. And I can kind of see where Joss Whedon finally left the Marvel universe, and where the studio's like, we need to make the movie shorter.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the Thor stuff. It's just, it feels like you've missed a huge chunk of what the hell went on when you're watching
it. It's kind of funny, like almost like a metaphor for the movie, like the set piece where Captain America and Black Widow are trying to get the Vision's body from Ultron in the city, like, like the train that literally goes off the rails in that scene. That's about where the movie like starts to kind of like, okay, now these subplots have not been developed enough, and we're rushing to the big finale. And I'm like, there should have been more. And it's weird, like it's almost like, because that movie was really long, like the original cut was really long. And I started thinking too about how the original cut for Straight Outta Compton, I know, random, but like was really long too, like three and a half hours. And the movie, it's the theatrical movie ended up being 2.5, and then Age of Ultron ended up being like 220. But it's got all this stuff that's needed, I'm assuming. And then they trim it, but they still want to give audiences like their money's worth. So the movie ends up being long, but it's like they either needed to trim more to make it like 2 hours, or leave it the way it was and be 3 hours. But it's like, then they end up somewhere in this middle ground where it's like too long, but it's also rushed at the same time. I don't know. It's interesting how that works.
No, I definitely can see what you mean. Yeah. I feel like if you at least just cut out the whole Thor subplot. Don't, like, hint at it. Or there are other parts of the movie, too, like the backstory between the siblings that just didn't really work.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was okay. It was just delivered in one kind of, like, expositional monologue. But it's, like, it worked. It wasn't, but it's, like, because at least, even if it was really, like, you know, they literally took the time to, you know, exposit that dialogue, at least you knew what was going on. Like, Thor goes into the cave with Stone Skarsgård. I'm like, why are you here? Like, I don't even know what the purpose of that was.
And then he's like, I've got it. And then he's like, I'm going to leave right now, and then I'll come back. And then he comes back, and he's like, I have it. And you're like, have what? I don't know what you have.
Yeah, it didn't make, yeah, that whole subplot could have just been cut out completely. But ultimately, I enjoyed it way more the second time.
Good.
Yeah, just random fun fact there. But shall we move on to our movies of the week?
I'm so excited. I saw Cop Car like forever ago now. So
yeah, I finally just watched it this week. We were gonna do it weeks ago, and then like a month ago. But life always happens, and so. But we're getting into it now. So our first movie, I guess, as you stated, is gonna be Cop Car.
You boy sure gave me a fright. What do you say we get you home safe? Huh? Okay, now you boys answer me now. Did you open up the trunk? Was there somebody inside the trunk?
Did you open the trunk? Did you open the trunk?
Did you open the trunk? Did you open the trunk? Did you open the trunk?
Will you answer me now?
Or I will shoot you dead right through this door. Tell me right now. Where is he? Son, I'm the only person out here that you can trust. I'm the only one that can help you.
Yeah, which I liked, and now I get to find out if you liked it or not.
Yeah, you mentioned it on the last episode. You're like, oh, so good. Like, you definitely didn't shy away from the fact that you really liked it. I liked it, but the more I think about it, the more I'm just kind of like, it was okay. Like, I don't know. Something about this movie really didn't click with me the way that I kind of expected it to, the way that these sort of like indie genre movies do. And I guess, I don't know if I heard this somewhere or just the tone of it made me think, I guess I was maybe had too high of expectations. I guess I was expecting another like Blue Ruin, which this movie clearly is not to that level of quality. But it's, I don't know. I mean, it's a fine, well-made movie ultimately, but it just, I don't know. It didn't click with me the way that it sounded like it clicked for you.
I didn't expect this movie to click with me. The trailer for it was played in front of every Alamo Drafthouse I went to all summer, and I wasn't a fan of the trailer. I thought it was really boring looking. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so awful. And then I saw the runtime and I was like, 80 minutes? Okay, maybe we can do this. And then I watched it at home on my computer because I had a screener of it. And I put my phone away, which is something that, like, if I'm watching a movie at home, I usually have my phone kind of by me so I can, like, check my email or, like, tweet at people. But I put it down and, like, it was a moment when the kids start playing with guns that I was like, oh my God. And I felt this tension and I don't know. I thought it worked up until the end with the kids, at least their arc. And I felt inherently very sad at the end. And I didn't expect to feel very sad. I didn't see any of the ending coming at all.
Maybe partially, I mean, I had listened to a podcast.
No, did they spoil the last 20 minutes for you?
They didn't spoil the last 20 minutes, but I believe the quote was like, it has a very Jason Voorhees type like ending where it ramps back up. So I'm like, okay, I clearly know what happens. And that sounds dumb that they did that. And they did, you know, obviously because somebody did said that they did. So I knew it going in. What ultimately happens with the kids was very unexpected. And I thought was really ballsy that they went there. Because I did not expect that to happen. At the very end, but I don't know. I guess I just was never really, I was never invested in anything. Like I was not really invested in the characters. Like, I mean, I liked that the kids were kids and they talked the way that kids would at that age. Like that felt really authentic, but like they never felt like flesh and blood characters to me. Mm. And like Kevin Bacon was like, you know, interesting. It's interesting that he's playing a villainy type role. And I thought he was fine in it, but again, not really, not a flesh and blood character. I mean, to me, or like there was just not a lot of dimensions to this movie. If that's the right word to say, I don't know. I just, and like I said before, I think the movie is like expertly crafted. I mean, this, you know, first time director, John Watts is like the movie looks gorgeous. And like some of the shots that he achieves on, you know, such a small budget, I applaud the filmmaking in it. I was just left feeling like, huh, that was fine. Like I, you know, I would not dissuade someone from seeing it. And I certainly did not dislike my time watching it, but it didn't really leave a lasting impact on me.
That's interesting. I mean, it's been a month, so I don't think much about the movie anymore, but I do remember for that whole week, I was just very, very high on the fact that it was just so well executed in its simplicity. And maybe that's what got me, is that I liked that it was just like this blip, this day in the life of these kids. You don't really, you know about their parents, but only enough to what they say. And then you know this cop is really bad because in the beginning of the film, he like drags his body out of the back of his trunk and you're like, oh, he's a shithead and he's a dirty cop. And I feel like that's basically all you need to know to kind of get into it, at least for me. And then, I don't know, there was a point though, even though I hated the cop, where I was kind of rooting for him to get the car back. Cause I was like, oh my God, if he just gets the car back, these kids will stop playing with these guns. Cause I don't know, I felt like once he showed up that they'd be okay, but it turns out they're not okay.
Right. Yeah, I guess. I mean, like this, no, I can't, you know, fault someone for like, cause I usually like things that are much more, you know, simplistic. I like that the movie, it, you know, he utilizes the locations, like the, especially like the landscape of it. And I like that it's only set in a day, like, because it feels like everything happens so fast. And I like this idea that this one seemingly harmless event, because it's like they're just kids and they're just kids being kids and they find this abandoned cop car and want to take it for a joyride, that little minuscule event sets off this like horrific chain of events. Like, I think that's really interesting. And like, I liked seeing where the movie went. Like I enjoyed the journey of watching it. I just like, and I was with it and invested, I guess I was invested as I was watching it. But then as I, you know, the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, that really wasn't, you know, that it was impressive. It was fine. It just didn't do it for me.
Well, maybe it's probably for the best then we're talking about two movies this episode. Cause I mean, unless I think you like Cop Car a lot, it's really hard to like, I mean, I don't know. Even if you like Cop Car a lot, it's really hard to dive into. Cause it's just like we've both mentioned, it's a very simple movie.
It's really simple, and it's hard to get into other things without really spoiling what
the last 20 minutes. Yeah,
exactly. Because other than that, it's pretty much a simple kind of chase movie in a way. I mean, there's not like a lot of chasing, but it's like these kids are in a cop car and this crooked cop wants it back. There's not really any other. There's like one other character that comes into play. This woman who is on the road.
Who sees the kids.
Who sees the kids driving. But that's really all that gets into. But it's like, I don't know. And like Kevin Bacon's like, we get that he's a dirty cop because he, you know, drags a body out, but it's like, and I like the way that he's able to, like, I'm trying to think, he's like a, I don't know. He's like a mastermind that he can totally like manipulate the situation, especially when he's talking back with dispatch and kind of like, you know, trying to fake, basically trying to lie to him that he masked the fact that his cop car got stolen. And I think like that stuff's interesting.
I thought it was kind of funny, and I love how the lady is going around saying, there's a stolen cop car, and then dispatch is like, is that yours? And they're like, he's like, no. And they believe him, and then the lady is made to believe that she's insane. I kind of thought that was great comic relief.
I did too, but also, I mean, because of the grasp of the filmmaking of the movie is like believable, but the more you think about it, you're like, they would know that was his car. Like, because each car is assigned to each officer, like they would be able to know it was his, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, but it was just, yeah. Okay. I agree with you there. I can't say anything else.
it's one of those, it's like, you know, again, you go with it, but it's like, again, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, because it didn't, it kind of fell apart both at the end and then like me upon myself reflecting on it that I was like, oh, wait a minute, they would know that was his car. Like that just is something that wouldn't be possible. But I mean, but it's, again, it's like, I don't dislike this movie by any sense of the word. I think it's a really, you know, a fine movie, and it's definitely a good debut feature. Kind of don't like that this director is doing a Spider-Man movie after this.
I know. I mean, I know he can get, like, obviously he'll create great action. I feel like potentially he'll have really great tension in the film, where I feel like a lot of the Spider-Mans have been missing. And I know that he'll have a great kid performance since we are getting a child Spider-Man finally, but I still don't care. I still just don't care.
Well, yeah, first of all, I don't want to see a new Spider-Man movie, maybe ever. I mean, but at least not for decades to come. Like, I don't need it. I don't want it. And secondly, it's like, you know, as we've seen this summer especially, but even last summer, it's like, you know, plucking these indie directors to go straight to the big shots might not be the best path. I mean, it worked for, you know, Colin Trevorrow, but with Jurassic World, but like, you know, Josh Trank in Fantastic Four, we know how that worked out. Mark Webb with the Amazing Spider-Man movies, like, you know, that didn't work out that well for him either. So it's just kind of like, you know, I wish him all the best, and I hope that it's everything that he wants, but I think the writing's on the wall a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just think that's maybe not the wisest career path. You know, maybe pull a Christopher Nolan and do like the mid-budget sort of movie before. I mean, if that's an option, I don't even know. Like, if that is even an option, do
a mid-budget Spider-Man.
No, I'm not saying that, but I mean a mid-budget movie. Period. Like,
oh yeah.
Nolan went from Memento to Insomnia, which, you know, a little bit bigger budget movie, and then to Batman Begins. So maybe, you know, maybe these directors need an Insomnia or something like that.
Oh yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, I just I feel like it's wasted talent on his part.
That's what I feel. It's like, especially because all these Marvel movies, as much as like, you know, certain directors have been able to put their stamp in those movies, like, you know, we just talked about Age of Ultron briefly, Joss Whedon, you know, is able to put his stamp on his two movies. James Gunn was able to do that with Guardians of the Galaxy. But it's like, but you look at these other ones, even like an established director like Kenneth Branagh, like, I mean, other than the sort of like Shakespearean drama, like there's nothing of his that's brought to the first Thor movie. Like, his voice is totally drowned out. Like,
yeah, he did better with Cinderella,
which I still haven't seen. And, you know, I know you really like it, and I'm sure it's good. I just don't care because it's not my kind of movie. But, I mean, I'm sure it's good. I just, again.
All right, you don't like big dress dramas. It's okay.
Not really, to be honest. I mean, on my other podcast, Over Under, we talked about Hannah, and then we brought up, like, you know, Joe Wright's filmography, and it's like, Anna Karenina. I was like, well, I didn't see it, so I can't really say anything about it, so moving on to the next thing. I don't know. I wish John Watts the best. I think this is a solid debut. I just think
he would have done better with maybe more of a dramatic, more intense film than Marvel.
Exactly. I think there's definitely potential here. Like, I don't think this is a great movie, but it's definitely full of of promise, which is kind of all you can hope for from a first movie. I just do think it's a little bit of a waste going straight to a movie like that when they know you're kind of not an established filmmaker and you're kind of just a vessel to bring whatever vision the studio has planned for, you know, 9-10 films or however many. So
basically they know you can direct and they know you can direct well, and they're going to dive off of your indie buzz to get Spider-Man going.
Yeah, but there's not much, like, this movie's well received, but it's not like, you know, Mark Webb with 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Josh
fair.
Trank with Chronicle. Like, yeah. That's what I think is weird about, or Colin Trevorrow even with Safety Not Guaranteed. Like, I don't know. Like, I think this movie's fine, and I think this director has a lot of talent. I just don't see why they're like, this guy. This is the guy. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't. I know I'm sounding really negative.
Especially
right
when
now,
the guy from 50, who did 50-50 and Warm Bodies, was in the work, like, in the talk, because he's done stuff like this. He's done movies with a bigger budget.
Absolutely. And I feel like there was one other, like, kind of established director too. But it's like, it's just random.
Though. Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like, and especially Jonathan Levine, like, again, I don't know. I think his talents could be utilized elsewhere.
Oh yeah.
So I'm glad he's not doing one, but it's totally. Like, you know, Spider-Man's also a wisecrack, and he's proven himself with, you know, kind of grounded comedies. So I don't know. That would have been a good pick if they had to. I don't know what, I don't know why we're even talking about this.
Well, it's because we're talking about, like, the future of the director of the movie we were talking about.
I know. But I feel like we dove way too far into talking about a Spider-Man movie that neither of us want to see.
I know. And we sound so bored every time we mention it. We're like, oh, sigh, Spider-Man.
Well, it's just kind of like, it's one of those, like you said, we kind of have to mention it. It would be weird and wrong to just completely avoid that. But at the same time, it's like, oh, okay, here we go. We got to talk about this again.
So. That's the whole point of us making this podcast, is we didn't have to talk Marvel all the time.
It's everywhere. It's
God
just
damn
everywhere.
It.
It's everywhere. But
you know where it's not? In Z for Zachariah.
It's not. That's a very forced but acceptable segue. I guess, yeah, do you have anything else to say about Cop Car? I mean, other than the fact that you really, really liked the movie, and I'm more reserved, but it's, you know, you could do worse for sure.
No,
I mean, I don't mean that as bad. I'm okay. Just saying, like, you know, it's a fine movie. It's a fine movie.
All right. Well, I really liked it. I thought I had a blast watching it. And I thought within its simplicity, it just really worked for me.
Yeah. I mean, I admire that it's simplistic, but yeah. Well, we can also move into another simplistic but complicated film, to say the least.
She's a special girl.
She sure is, sir.
It's funny it took you to make me realize that.
You wish I'd never come?
No. If you weren't here, we wouldn't be so close to finishing the wheel, moving forward, getting electricity. Truth is, though, you were never a threat to me, Caleb. I mean, I told Anne to do whatever was necessary to keep you from leaving.
All right.
Funny?
No, I don't believe you, sir. Jealousy doesn't suit you.
Oh, yeah, complicated for sure. I feel bad that we're recording it right after you watched it, because I've had a full day to think about this movie, and I've talked about it with a girl who also read the book like me. And, yeah, I don't know if you liked it, but I kind of liked this movie a lot. Not as much as like Cop Car, but I liked it.
Oh, see, I'm flip-flop the two movies. I mean, I wish I want some more time to think about it, but I I really liked this movie.
Okay, good. Because
I would go as far as say that I kind of even love this movie.
It is inching towards love for me. Last night I was like, I liked that, and like today I'm like, okay, I really liked that.
And this is exciting because here's another indie filmmaker who has no interest in making a big studio movie, who has come out and said he has no interest in making a big studio movie. The director we're talking about is Craig Zobel, which did you see Compliance?
No, I haven't yet, but now I really want to after this.
You should see Compliance. It's kind of like, I mean, it's based on a true story. It's like the better version of Phone Booth, I would say. If you ever saw that Joel Schumacher movie years ago,
so.
it's not good, but like,
okay.
Compliance is like a very, you know, it's a very small, but very complicated, drama, also really uncomfortable and unsettling to sit through at times, but it's really interesting the way that, you know, it examines the way that people, you know, will do or say anything when they, you know, when they're told, or at least they're told by a higher authority, at least they think they are. So I think that's really interesting. But so, yeah, I mean, I guess a good angle to dive off possibly would be, so you've read this book.
Yeah, I have. I had to read it in middle school. It was one of our required readings.
And I have not read it.
Yeah. Well, so, it's not like it matters because it's not the same at all. There are parts
really?
Where we were talking. Yeah, me and the girl were talking about it today where you were like, I don't know. She didn't like it because she thought that the book was better. And I was like, I'm not sure which one's better. It thinly takes the plot from the book of this girl who is surviving in this nuclear holocaust in a valley. And then a man shows up. And basically, that's the only similarity. The girl's not even the same age. The guy, I can't even remember his race in the film, but there's only one guy in the book. I mean, it was only one guy. There's never a second guy.
I liked that they added that in that. We never, you know, because we hadn't seen the movie at the time, clearly, but we mentioned this movie on another Overender episode. There was a film that I picked as underrated from New Zealand, which is, I think, where this is set, or at least it was filmed.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. There's no way this was filmed in the U.S.
Yeah, it's incredibly shot. But this movie called The Quiet Earth from 1985, just this weird, oddball New Zealand movie. It's more of a cataclysmic disaster than a than a post-apocalyptic story. Yeah. But it's the same thing. It's got a last man on Earth scenario, and then it's the same. Ultimately, there it becomes a three-hander like this movie, and they're the same race, like, you know, the way that this movie is. So I don't know. I don't have anything to like really like go off. I just, as an interesting tidbit. So I guess I'm already kind of prone to like this type of movie, but this is the science fiction that I tend to lean towards. Like I love my Mad Max. I love my Edge of Tomorrow, you know, my Interstellar, like these spectacle driven sci-fi movies. But here's something that's very, it's very quiet and it's very like, you know, it's the end of the world, but it's like, it's just, there's a natural decay to the look of the movie. It's not like, you know, there's no flame throwing guitars or anything like that.
They wouldn't have a place in this movie.
No, they would not have a place in this movie. It's just, it's like, it's a very natural disaster film. I mean, yes, it takes place after a natural disaster, but the film itself is very natural. And the performances too are like three of the best performances I've seen this year, I would say.
Oh man.
Without a doubt.
They're very good. I think I definitely, when the male, where the males are concerned, I think they're easily the best I've seen all this year.
Yeah, Chiwetel Ejiofor especially, I think, is terrific in this movie. I love his sort of, like, torment. I mean, I guess all of them are tormented, but, like, he feels like the most tormented of the characters, to say the least.
He does, but at the same time, I don't trust him as a character. And I didn't trust Chris Pines either, but there's something so interesting about it that, like, the only person you really trust is Margot Robbie's character.
Because we're set up to trust her.
Yeah, and I mean, she's lived at home all her life in this valley, and maybe it's from the book, but yeah, she's easily the most trustworthy character. And what's also very interesting is I didn't think about this until I listened to one of my favorite podcasts. Like I mentioned, it's over now. It was called Voice Film Cast, but Voice Film Club. Anyway, they mentioned that this is a faith-based movie, kind of. It's very intertwined with faith and religion, and it does it so naturally, so it's not very... It doesn't beat you on the head, but the Margot Robbie's character, Anne, she believes in God, and she believes in a higher, like, being, a deity, and what eventually kind of, it's not race that eventually divides her between her and Chiwetel's character, but it's the fact that he's a man of science in the end,
yes,
which is, I thought was so interesting.
Oh, I can see that from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah, when they had the discussion about the church.
Well, there's that, but even subtler, which I thought was a brilliant scene. Well, first of all, I like his sort of introduction. Like, we're introduced to him that he's made it to this valley out of some horrible area. This valley that is completely clean. That it's got clean air.
Yeah.
And so he makes it there. And then, you know, Margot Robbie goes to introduce herself, and he points a gun at her. I mean, because we're in this sort of ravaged society that we don't trust each other. So it's like, instantly it's like, here's this nice guy, but he could kill you. Like, I like that sort of like duality. And it gets like that. It's very obvious because that's a very black and white sort of like 0 to 60 reflex of his. But then it gets a little more muddled later. And I like that. But I'm talking about the scene when they first eat together and they both sit down and she starts praying to herself, but she's sitting there praying and he looks at her and he's like, kind of has this like not fake smile necessarily, but you can tell he's like, I want to say something because I don't believe in what you're doing. But at the same time, you've given me food, you've given me shelter. So I'm not going to say anything at the same time. So it's just like very complicated look, like right away you're like, okay, he's a guy of science. Like he doesn't believe in God, and this is where that's going to drive a wedge between them.
Yeah, which I kind of enjoyed that it was that versus some. And I mean, this movie could have easily, they do mention it very briefly where it's like, where once he realizes she's not very into him, he's like, oh, is it because of my race? But it's very briefly mentioned, and the audience knows it's not.
Mm-hmm. But he makes it that. He at least like, it may not have even been at the forefront of her mind. That you're talking about when Chris Pine comes into play.
Yeah.
And he says, like, I see the way you look at him, and it's like, it's okay. He's like, you can go off and be white people together.
Yeah,
which is like, oh, like, it's like this guy. I mean, it was heavy to begin with, but it's like, oh, this got even more interesting.
Yeah, and it's very, and Chris Pine's character is also very interesting, where you're immediately led to believe he's not a great guy because he's kind of lurking for the past couple of days. But then, and can we get into spoilers? Because I feel like we can't really dive into this movie without talking them.
I mean, yeah, I think we can get into spoilers. So
not heavy spoilers, but...
No, but we're about 35 minutes into this podcast, 35 minutes and 24 seconds to exact. So we can put it in the show notes or something to be like, we get into spoilers of this movie. So, you know, skip it or listen to it when you've seen it, which also, by the way, this movie's on VOD. So
yeah, which is how we watched it. I mean,
true. And both movies are, for that matter.
Yeah.
Come to think of it. Yeah. But anyway.
What I thought was so terrifying is like when Chris Pine, you think he's an awful guy, and then he tells them, oh, well, the reason I didn't show up at first is because I saw you kill somebody else. And that just immediately like sends shivers down your spine. And then you find out who he killed later, and it kind of makes you less inclined to be on Chiwetel's side.
Maybe, but you understand to like the story that he tells where he's coming from. But
it's yeah.
But both.
But is he lying?
Exactly. Well, both guys are that way too.
Yeah.
Like I really like that. Like, and Chris Pine makes things really interesting because it's like obviously he's got those dreamy eyes. Like that's hard not to fall.
Oh my god,
like,
he's Chris Pine.
Yeah,
it's like
I
he walks into
them.
The room
Come
and
on.
You're like, ooh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like he's Chris Pine, and he tells her that he's of faith too. So that like kind of inclines her to more side with him.
Yeah.
And then there's these scenes, and it's interesting because you said that the kids with the guns and cop car, you felt this tension. I didn't. Like, I did not feel it, and I should have, especially, like, you know, being from a family of hunters and, you know, being around guns and learning how to use a gun at a young age. Like, I'm watching these kids. I'm like, okay, clearly you did not take a hunter safety course because you should not be pointing guns at each other or yourselves. But I don't know. I just didn't feel that tension. Whereas, like, there's a scene in this movie where they go turkey hunting.
Oh, and, yeah.
Like, it really, like, it put me on edge. Like, the whole scene.
Because you wonder, like, who's going to shoot who first. Because these two men hate each other at this point.
They do, but here's what I love about this movie, too. They're very, like, they're both really well spoken, and they both, like, they know that they hate each other. Like, it's acknowledged, but there's never this explosive moment. Like, it never goes there, and I really, really appreciate that. And I also like that they conceal that fact from Anne too. Like, especially the scene where they're dancing and they're listening to records and they dive into the pond. Like, they don't show that they hate each other to her, which I also find fascinating.
Yeah, I do find that also very interesting, and their dynamic is really great. Oh, speaking of guns, another really great gun scene in this movie is when you don't know why, but he's pointing one of the sniper rifles and watching Margot Robbie as she gets she gets gas. She starts pumping gas out. And you're like, wait, why is he going to kill her? And then you later find out that she's like told him to look through the magnifying like telescope to see her.
But you don't know that at first.
Oh, I know.
So it's really unsettling.
You're like, why was he doing that? And then, like, immediately they, like, tell you, oh, well, this is why. Obviously, we're way getting in the spoilers here, so we do definitely need to put a spoiler.
Yeah, no, I definitely think we do. But, yeah, and then the idea, obviously the conflict, too, to go back to the science versus religion conflict, you know, comes early on when he's trying to build a windmill system to where they can generate hydro power. They can generate power from the waterfall. But the best wood that they have is from Anne's father's church, tiny church that he would preach on. And so, you know, part of their conflict comes like, we need to build that down. And even though she agrees, but you don't totally agree with her that she agrees.
Yeah. Where she's kind of like, we should, but you can see her holding back and her not wanting to.
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't even gotten, I mean, obviously I'm sure people can look it up right now, but we haven't really got into the character of Anne, who's played by Margot Robbie. Cause I know we mentioned the other two actors, but we haven't mentioned Margot Robbie, and who I think is, you know, is great in this movie. I think she's like really one of the most talented up and coming actresses. Like, I think she's great.
Yeah, definitely. But you said, did you want to talk more about Anne and like introduce her maybe a little bit more?
Oh, introduce her. Oh yeah, sure. Sorry. I got a sidetrack that she, you know, she's, but I like her sort of role in all this too, especially because she's like, I love the, like her end of the complicated relationship between her and, John, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. Like, especially like he makes a pass at her first, like almost violently.
It is kind
and
of
drunkenly.
Yeah, it's very scary, especially
It's very scary, and you're like, okay, automatically you're like, okay, she wants nothing to do in that department. But then it's also, but then the next night it's like complete role reversal. Like they're drinking wine, she drinks too much, and she makes a pass at him. It's almost like she's come to kind of accept, at least at that moment, that they're possibly the last two people. And maybe the last two people who will see each other, and that they're going to have to recreate somehow. And so I think that's her motivation there. And
yeah,
and then, you know, she makes a pass to him and he wants nothing to do with it. And I don't know. I find that really, really interesting. And again, I wish I had more than, you know, 5 minutes after watching this movie before recording to dwell on it a little more, because I wish I would have watched, like, reverse these movies. I wish I would have just watched Cop Car and then watched See for Zachariah, like, whatever day I watched Cop Car, because I think it would have made, you know, I might have had more to bring. But I still, you know, what else can we dive into?
Oh, well, actually, I was thinking, since you didn't get to muddle over this, I wanted to talk about the end of the movie, which, yeah, definitely we already have the spoiler warning, so I think we're good there. But I also wanted to talk about it compared to the book too. I'm going to tell you what the book ending is. So in the book, there's just obviously two people, and then the female character, Anne, discovers that this man has killed his partner. And so she decides in the end of the movie, or in the end of the book, sorry, to pack her things and get out of the valley and walk into the radiation.
Oof,
it's kind of seen as like a suicide almost. And what's very interesting about the ending is the author didn't write it. He passed away before he could write it, and his kid wrote it. So I feel like it's very interesting, especially compared to the ending of what the movie chose, which at the end of the movie, Chris Pine's character disappears. We don't know why. But there are some theories.
I also love, sorry to interrupt, but I love the shot. Like, at first I thought it was really on the nose, but I love the shot of her pushing her book, and I'm not sure if it's a Bible. I didn't really get to pay attention.
It's probably a Bible.
It's probably a Bible, and she's pushing it towards a glass of water until it falls off. And it's like, and before, like, because right after Chris Pine's character disappears, in air quotes, because we don't know, he might have actually left, or Chiwetel Ejiofor might have let go of the rope and he fell down
the ravine.
We don't know exactly, but she does that to not only signify that it might happen to Chris Pine, but Chiwetel Ejiofor walks to the edge, and you think he might jump off into it. And so she, you know, her little, you know, symbolic gesture, and then obviously, you know, like I said, we've said many times, we are in spoilers. Chiwetel Ejiofor did not jump off, and she goes to play her organ, and he walks in.
Yeah.
And I'm trying, and I haven't really, like, do you have any theory? Because I haven't really come up with anything.
Okay, well, first off, I thought that part was very interesting. I actually rewound the movie and watched it again so I could fully grasp what happened and feel like I could grasp what happened. All right, so he walks in and she's playing the organ. She's playing this beautiful piece of music. And in the end, I felt like it kind of brings up the question of if you knew you had to repopulate the earth, and like potentially, if you potentially were the last two people on earth, would you repopulate with a man that you know might be a murderer, or not might, but you actually know is a murderer? Because one of the things that you find out in the conversation with Chris Pine and Chiwetel and Anne, and in the part where Chiwetel's character reveals that he killed somebody, is that it might have been her brother. So not only did this man, he might have killed your brother, but he also might have killed the man that you fell in love with. Would you repopulate the earth with that person, knowing that it might be your duty to do that? Or, like, I feel like she's totally trapped. Which makes me almost, like, think about the ending of the book where the character goes into the radiation and just commits suicide. I thought, I can't think which ending is stronger, because I thought it was, they're both terrifying.
They're both terrifying? You know, just, and again, I haven't read the book, so I don't know, like, you know, how it would feel reading that after reading, you know, what had come before it. But just judging based from what you told me on those two, the movie ending is much stronger, I think, because it leaves so much more to the imagination and leaves so much more. And plus, like, I think that's a great theory, but I think there's also other theories that could be drawn from it too. And I think it opens up the conversation instead of being an open shut, oh, she killed herself. Like, I really think that that Craig Zobel did a very smart job, or not Craig Zobel. I know he directed it, but there's a different screenwriter. Nisar Modi, I think did a, you know, excellent job of making that different and more ambiguous.
Yeah. I just think it's so unsettling the way it ends then, because she's playing this music, he's watching her, and then it ends. And you just know from the signs that he's given, like he with the when he got too drunk, and then he kind of made a very harsh, like not harsh, a very forceful move on her. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it leaves you thinking, okay, this guy won't let her get off easy.
No.
And then it makes you wonder about his past girl, because there's this point in the movie where she finds this picture and she's like, who's this? Is this your wife? And he's like, no, that wasn't my wife. It's just some girl. And he kind of never really tells you what happened to her.
No, he said it was his sister.
Oh, right. He says, okay, sorry. I missed that. I might have gotten up and got a snack during that part then.
Oh,
I will admit, I did that.
way to pause it. But anyway.
Oh, man. Well, okay. So it was his sister, but I don't know. Can you trust him?
Not entirely.
No.
But I also find, again, I found it interesting that we get to spend more time with him. I think this is why it makes the movie interesting, because it's a complete gray area of a film. But, you know, we don't exactly trust him, but we do get a little bit more time to spend with him, so we can, like, you know, you see the sort of dualities. Whereas, like, Chris Pine might have been a really bad person, too. We don't know necessarily.
Oh, yeah.
Because we didn't get to spend as much time with him. But, again, the context clues. And, like, I was saying, I think I forgot to make the point. Maybe it didn't. Like, he tells her that he's of faith, which I know I brought up. But then,
but he,
like,
also knows she is of faith from the moment
exactly.
he walked into the church. And he, like, kind of sneaky watched her play the same organ that she's playing at the end.
Exactly. So, like you said, he's lurking, and so he, you know, potentially knows all these things, and he knows exactly what he says, what he needs to say to sleep with her, which they do.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, he just as well may have been a bad, you know, just as bad, if not worse. But, you know, but again, we do, and I love that we don't know. I love that we don't know. It's very, like, unsettling and very, like, you know, very, very much a darker ending than I guess I was. I wouldn't say I was anticipating, but it was definitely, you know, it definitely gut punched me.
It kind of really flips the whole Adam and Eve perspective, where Eve is supposed to be the one who's, like, into temptation, and she's kind of like the more, I would say, evil version, like, evil, like, of the two in Adam and Eve. But this one, it feels like it's more so the men. And, like, if to repopulate the earth, like, the woman is more pure, the woman is more down to earth and less interested in temptation, more interested in just being.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, she's mentioned that. She's like, oh yeah, I've lived here and I don't have any desire to go anywhere else. And she's just trying to survive.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
And live the rest of her life before it dies naturally. It's not like, because that's essentially what she wants to do, is die naturally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
There's also a really good scene where they're in the store and Chiwetel's character, which is, his name's John Loomis, is, like, looking through all the snacks, and he says, I know so much about you from all the things that you don't eat.
Right, like, you don't drink cherry soda.
That was kind of funny.
The world could end, and you still wouldn't, you know, you could run out of fluid, and you still won't drink cherry soda.
It's like, well, maybe she might, but she definitely doesn't prefer it.
Yeah, no, I really liked that scene as well.
Yeah, but it's also kind of scary, because he's also throwing things around in, like, almost a drunken, like, rage, and she's
well,
just,
he's
like,
really drunk.
And she's just standing there going, uh-huh.
Yeah, she's like, okay, and she tries to grab the bottle from him. He's like, no, 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 no. And I like that, too, because that's a very, like, you know, because sometimes when an actor performs something, you know, drunk, it tends to be, like, over the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, that seemed like a very natural, you know, drunken state for that character. Like, it just felt really right.
I agree. Oh, this movie. Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I like it so much more.
I like it a lot, and I definitely want to watch it again. And, you know, again, I'm not gonna. You know, count chickens before they hatch, because we still have, you know, 3 or 4 months left of films. But I mean, but overall, it's been not a great year for movies. But this would easily be in my top 10 if the year were to end today.
Interesting.
Like, hands down, because, and especially too, we mentioned Sundance movies. This is the only movie that came out of Sundance this year that I saw that I think is, like, truly great and truly, like, worth people seeing. Like, Cop Car was fine. Like I mentioned, Dope was underwhelming, to say the least.
Oh.
I'm
sad you think that.
Also, the more I thought about Dope, I enjoyed it the first time when I watched it, and the more I thought about it, I was like, nah, that movie didn't really work for me. I think it's kind of a mess. And also, when I found out that was the director's fourth film and not his first, I really went down on it, because I was like, oh, this is messy, but that's a good, you know, first film attempt. Oh, this is his fourth film? Yeah, there's no excuse. That should not have been as messy as it was.
We'll have to talk about that another time, but
maybe so. But yeah, I did not, you know, I definitely did not like that. Did not like that movie as much as I had hoped, or any of the other writers of Gotcha movies liked it. I feel like there was something else that I saw, but I can't remember what it was. But But yeah, this is really strong, I felt.
I would say after Grandma, you know, thinking about it so much and actually talking about it just now, I would say this might be my second favorite Sundance movie after Grandma. Wait, no, Finders Keepers also came out at Sundance, so
which I've heard is really good.
Yeah, that's really good.
I heard really good things about that, and I, you know, wanted to see it.
It's definitely a tough choice because this year, for some odd reason, I feel like I've actually enjoyed most of the Sundance movies, which it rarely happens.
Because they're almost a weird genre in and of themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like they have all these quirky tics. And I mean, last year was kind of an exception to the rule because like both Boyhood played there and Whiplash played there. And it's like, again, those were exceptions to the rule. But this year, like, and even things like, you know, I feel like I saw another movie that played there.
Did you see What We Do in the Shadows? Because that played there, I think.
No, I really wanted to see that. I did not see Me and the Earl and the Dying Girl because I don't care.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, actually, no, it doesn't surprise me that you didn't like Dope because they're very similar movies, I feel.
Are they? Interesting. Because, yeah, we should talk about that. But
In style, they are.
Yeah. Okay. But ultimately, yeah, this movie was immensely satisfying to me. I know that sounds really like poll quotey, but I really enjoyed this movie, and I was excited to see it because I like Craig Zobel, the filmmaker. I really liked Compliance, but I guess I didn't expect it to you know, to like it as much as I did. And also, how did this movie just get dumped on VOD? Like, I kind of was expecting it to get a wide, or at least like a, because Lionsgate picked it up, I expected it to get the same sort of like release that something like Mud did, like a 300 theater opening and then expansion. Like, I don't know why they couldn't have done that with this movie.
They probably didn't have faith in it. That is the biggest thing, which is weird because you would think they would, because they have three phenomenal actors that people actually like. You could have at the very least advertised it off of those three and people would go and see it. And it's also a YA property.
Interesting. Because I don't usually love YA films. But this is done totally different than anything else.
Well, it's also like YA from the 70s. So, I mean, true. It's a little bit different. It's like Catcher in the Rye, like YA. It's not really YA.
It's not
Hunger what YA Games, is.
Divergent, yeah. YA. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like Hunger Games, but, you know, it's not in that subgenre, like, of current post-apocalyptic dystopian YA. Yeah. I'm also still chuckling that you said the studio didn't have faith in it.
Well, because, I mean, it is really weird that it is kind of a faith-based movie in a weird way. But
it's not faith-based in the way that the sort of, like, easily digestible, like, you know, like Your Heaven Is For Real or whatever else just did really well at the box. I don't know what it was, but something like top the box office
War Room,
okay, that's what it was, or like
90 Minutes in Heaven.
I heard that tanked, but
well, it didn't top the box office, but I'm just saying that's another one.
Yeah, but it's not like those movies, like the Kirk Cameronization of like faith-based movies, like those are like ready to be spoon-fed to them. Like, it's kind of like I feel like I've referenced Over Under a lot in this podcast. I'm sorry, this is our thing, but like so I hate to mention another podcast, but anyway, what we did a long time ago, we did Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ as underrated and Passion of the Christ is overrated.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, the argument we made, because Last Temptation, I would argue, is much more like enlightening, much more spiritually enlightening, even though it definitely takes some liberties that people weren't happy with, than Passion of the Christ, which is basically a snuff film. To its core, like that's all it is Jesus getting the shit beat out of him for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But I guess what the argument we made about Last Temptation of Christ is, wouldn't you rather like Jesus be put through the ringer, but then come out having your faith more reaffirmed than just having it spoon fed to you? I mean, I feel like that's more rewarding to me than something like that.
Yeah. And what I kind of like about Z for Zechariah is, it never says that her believing in what she believes in is wrong, which I kind of like that. It never like brings her down as a character. It never makes her like dumber. Or in another way, it also doesn't, the fact that she believes in a god doesn't, she believes in a god and the god doesn't give her presence for believing.
Exactly.
It just, it's something that gets her through the day.
You know what movie I thought about as I was watching this had a similar dynamic, or at least they brought up the dynamic, but totally dropped the ball and went nowhere?
Mm-hmm.
Prometheus.
Mm.
I totally thought about Noomi Rapace's character was brought up with like Catholic faith, and then her boyfriend or husband in that was the, you know, was the science-y mind, and he was like, you know, how can you be a scientist and be faith-based at the same time? And it's like, oh, that's interesting, and then it went nowhere in it. Whereas this... this is what the movie's about.
Yeah.
Succeeds at it.
Man, you're making me like this more and more. Like, actually talking about this movie is really nice. And I had mixed things going in. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did because I heard from someone it wasn't good. And then I heard from someone who actually I trust a lot. She came out and said she loved it. So maybe I love it too, just like her. I don't know.
I would put myself in that camp for sure. And like you mentioned, I'm really glad we added a second movie because... you know, the cop car, if we just did cop car, it would have been like a 10 minute episode. It's like, oh yeah, here's what we thought about it. Okay. See ya.
Yeah.
So no, I'm glad we decided to talk about this movie as well. Cause there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. And I'm really glad I also forced you to watch it. Cause by me watching it, I want to say that it made you watch it. Cause you might not have watched it. I've had a feeling.
No. I was going to watch it eventually. Uh-huh. It wasn't like, no, really. It just wasn't like, it wasn't top of my list.
Well, it actually was for my summer. I think it made my top of the summer list, and I put it in our summer movies to look out for, even though no one else voted on it except me.
I kind of know you were right to do it. I just sometimes I get lost in the sea of like the indie movies. It's like, when's it coming out? Like sometimes I just don't know when they come out.
Well, so,
or when I make my lists, it's not on the release calendar at that time.
Well, luckily, this was on Austin's release calendar. It was supposed to be, but then it never came to Austin. It was on our release calendar.
Interesting. I don't even know if it played in Seattle. I mean, I'm sure it did, maybe. I don't know. But like we said, it is on most, you know, VOD platforms.
I've rented it through Amazon for like $6.
I rented it on iTunes, and it's also on Vudu, if that's the way you go as well.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of options, and it's worth seeing. I mean, we're out of the summer doldrums, at least from what I've heard from the movies coming out this week.
Mm.
Like, I mean, what I was to say, if we did this episode like 2 weeks ago, I'd be like, well, skip the theater. But I mean, Black Mass comes out this week, and Everest opens in IMAX exclusively. And there's been some pretty good things said about those movies. So, But if you decide to stay home, this is something you should watch.
Yeah, this is definitely easily one of my favorite things I've seen on VOD.
Oh, easily. It's one of my favorite things I've seen this year, period.
Oh, yeah, so, it's pretty good. It's getting up there.
I haven't seen as many movies as you have, and have been underwhelmed by a lot. Not that I'm...
Well, that's just because you haven't negative. Seen Cinderella yet.
That's gonna be the one. That's gonna be the
hey,
one.
It's in like my top 20 right now.
I don't even know what would be in my top. I don't even think I have like 20 like movies that I would feel comfortable being like, yeah, I stand by that. Like maybe like 15, maybe. But this is one of them.
Yeah, this is definitely one of them.
This is definitely one of them. So yeah, any other thoughts on Z for Zachariah?
Even though it's not like the book, it is so good. And I feel like, I will say that it was really interesting talking to the girl that had read the book today at work, because she actually didn't like the movie because it was so different from the book. And I don't know, this is different than The Maze Runner or The Scorched Trials, where the fact that it's different from the book kind of takes away from its uniqueness. I feel like the book is very unique and it's very good, but the movie also is very unique and it stands up on its own.
Yeah, and I think I've said this many, many times before on various other outlets, but I'm a firm believer in, you know what, the movie doesn't have to be the same as the book.
No.
And I'm totally okay if it is. As long as the movie functions as a movie, that's all that matters. And this movie definitely does.
Yeah.
So.
And there's definitely some similar themes from the book in the movie, but there's also some new themes that I kind of enjoyed.
Nice. Well, see, there you go. If you've read the book, then, you know, it's nice to have read a book and still be surprised by a movie as well.
Yeah, and this is one of them. And what about your last thoughts?
Oh,
or your continuing thoughts?
My continuing thoughts really is just like I'm still kind of, you know, speechless and blown away by this movie. And I just watched it on my laptop. Not my preferable method of watching a movie, mind you, but I definitely, you know, I was hooked. I was sitting there with my headphones on, just like I can't stop watching this. This is really great, and it was really refreshing because, I was gonna say it's been a while since I've seen like a really great movie, but I thought Heaven Knows What was great, so I can't say that. But it's been a good week. It's picked up my movie going spirits, and I'm excited for this weekend and for the rest of the fall.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited now for the fall after watching a bunch of really pretty good movies the past few times I've been to a movie theater. And I'm also going to go see the Quay Brothers documentary tomorrow night. So I'm like super excited.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, I'm definitely seeing both Black Mass and Everest this weekend. So
I'm definitely going to try to see Black Mass.
Yes. I've heard nothing but good things, and anything that I've heard that's not good.
Don't say
almost,
it.
No. Almost everyone has agreed that Johnny Depp is pretty phenomenal in the movie, even if the movie, the worst thing I've heard is like, it's a pretty plain crime movie. That's really the worst I've heard, but with a great performance at the center.
Okay, good. I thought you were about to say that Johnny Depp's performance is disappointing. And then I was like, if you're going to say that, just leave. I'm just going to turn off this podcast.
I'm just going with what I heard. I obviously have not seen the movie.
Okay, good. So. I really hope it's good. I love Johnny Depp.
Yeah. I mean, I can even see without seeing the movie where whoever said that, I'm trying to think where I read that from. I can definitely see where they're coming from. The director, Scott Cooper, is a very great actor's director, but like his movies are like, they're good, but they're, you know, the movie themselves aren't like, I don't know, these extravagant films. I mean, they're very much character pieces, both Crazy Heart and Out of the Furnace.
Oh yeah. Well, but, I'm excited. More movies, yeah. More good movies. Fall season is upon us, and the Oscar season keeps looking better and better every day.
It is, though I'm definitely...
It's not last year. And it's never going to be 2007.
No. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, like, I'm looking forward to a lot of movies, but, like, it's September, and I'm already sick of, like, Oscar buzz. Like, I'm already, sick of the Variety articles that come out, and they're like, Oscar buzz, because Toronto just ended. And I was just like, enough. Just let them be. Just let them be movies, and then we'll see the chips fall where they lay. Like,
like the Oscar buzz for Anomalisa? Is that the pronunciation? Is that correct? Eternal Sunshine Writers.
Oh yeah, there's that, and then like the Danish Girl, and then the Martian, obviously, and I'm just like, enough. I just want to see the movies. I don't care what their Oscar potential is. I just want to see or not see, depending on what they are.
I just want to see Room after reading that book.
That I do want to see.
Ooh, the standing ovation just made me so excited, and every time I see Brie Larson, I get all giddy and excited because the book was so good.
Yeah, that movie looks pretty strong. But anyway, I think since we're trailing off, it might be a good time to wrap it up.
We're talking about the future.
Yes. So this is our sixth episode, I believe, of Unspooled Reel. As always, you can check out our news, reviews, this podcast, editorials, features, what have you, at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gotchamovies. You can also follow us on Twitter at Unspooled Reel now and like us on Facebook.
Yeah, because I did that.
Yes. Well, you do the social network. I edit the podcast. It's fair.
It is fair.
It's a fair trade.
It is.
On the podcast, you can check out the other podcasts that I co-host, Over Under Movies, with Octa Kozak and Eric Clanahan, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. We just released an episode this week of Akira and Tokyo Story, so you can definitely check that out. What else? You can listen to this podcast on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ryolli90, R-Y-O-L-L-I-E 90.
And I'm at Jenny Lee, X33, Jenny with a Y, L-E-I-G-H. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. So that's that concludes this episode. So the next time we record, we're going to be discussing The Martian, which we've already...
I'm so excited.
I'm excited, too. As somebody who grew up, you know, with Alien, Blade Runner, and Gladiator, I'm really looking forward to see if Ridley Scott still has it in him to make another great film.
And no surprise here, I have read the book.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course you've read the book.
Of course I have.
But, I mean, I've heard it's a good book, and, you know, Matt Damon gets lost in space again, so...
Woohoo! Except on a planet that's more attainable.
Yeah, this is true. He's got to complete the mission. He's got to complete it. He's got to complete the mission. But anyway, thank you for listening, and of course, thank you, Jenny, for talking movies.
Always.